Welcome to Tampa Bay FM's Synergy Connection, where life as you currently live it can be transformed into the life you've always dreamed of. Understanding your synergistic connections is the pathway to your emotional, physical, spiritual, and mental wellness. Let's begin connecting the dots. Welcome back to Synergy Connection Show. I have as my guest a new person today that I'm just getting to know, and his name is Doug Warner. Doug is a yoga and meditation teacher and a certified labyrinth facilitator, which he is going to explain a little bit more about in a few minutes. Before beginning the show, as I normally do, I want to send you into synergyconnectionradio.com. And on my website, you will see a boomer flag that you can click on, and that will take you into the boomer's website, where there are many different, I would say, nutritional products. And without wellness, as I've mentioned on almost every show now, we really struggle to have the rest of our lives fall into place. You can be emotionally balanced. You can have wonderful academic accolades after your name. You can be spiritual by nature. But if you're struggling with your health, it's going to make it incredibly difficult for you to function on those other three levels. So I do encourage people to go in and take a look at the Boomer products and see just what is there and how maybe one or two or three of those products could benefit your overall wellness, regardless of your age. So now I'm going to come back to Doug, and we're going to talk about a lot of different things today, but a part of it is Doug's journey from being a military intelligence individual to what he does today and how that journey has impacted his life, and it's really quite fascinating. You have Warner Healing Guidance. That's the name of your company?
Yes, it is.
And you're located in Largo, Florida?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so why don't you share a little bit about, not what we're talking about totally, but a little bit about your background, how people can get hold of you if after this hour they go, man, I have got to get hold of Doug.
Okay, absolutely, Lucy. Thank you for having me today.
Oh, my pleasure.
So if you want to get a hold of me, first of all, my website address is www.warnerhealingguidance.com. My email address is douglas@warnerhealingguidance.com. And if you want to give me a call, it's 727-804-5356. And currently, I'm teaching yoga and meditation on a weekly basis at a facility called Yoga for All in Seminole, Florida. And if you are in this area, Tampa Bay area, please join us for classes and look at our schedule online. That's yogaforall.com. I also do workshops on a monthly basis at that facility, where I do a variety of workshops concerning yoga, meditation, and some of the topics we're going to talk about today.
I'm going to share that I will be attending one on December 22nd, and it's the Winter Solstice and Labyrinth Walk. Is that what you're calling it?
Absolutely. Okay. I do we'll talk today a little bit about what I do at the Labyrinth, and mm-hmm. I'll explain the Labyrinth a little bit, but this Sunday, December 22nd, yes, we have a Labyrinth Walk and a workshop. And the Labyrinth Walk is a walking meditation. I do every solstice and every equinox, these benchmarks in the Earth's energy mm-hmm. flow. We celebrate that with the Labyrinth Walk, the walking meditation, celebrating Earth, but also helping ourselves connect with our intuitive consciousness in this walking meditation.
Okay. And for those of you who are hearing the show in January, which is when this one is going to air, this is a pre-recorded show because of the busyness of both of our schedules. Right now, we're approaching Christmas, and I think everyone is feeling the pressure of getting everything done. So Doug was nice enough to come over and let me pre-record him for this January air date. But at any rate, I am going to be at this particular workshop on December 22nd. All right, so we're going to talk a little bit now about how you ever got started coming out of military intelligence to where you are today.
Well, I guess the journey began, I'd been in the Army as an intelligence officer for 11 years. I spent the last 7 years mostly overseas, working and living undercover with my family, my young son and my wife. Very stressful job. Went through Desert Storm, getting involved in intelligence collection. I'm not going to go into all the details for obvious reasons, but it was a very, I want to say, negative energy job, if you will. Uh-huh. I was very proud to serve my country and do what I did, but the stress of living under those circumstances and what was required for me in the job, I realized was starting to undermine or unravel my life, actually. My health was deteriorating. My marriage was deteriorating. It was becoming a disaster.
I'm sure your son felt all of that.
My son felt it too. He was young at the time. He was about. We left. I was stationed in Europe for 5 years. Fortunately, I was able to come back to the States before I made any changes and what have you. He was 5 at the time when we came back to the States, and I was actually, my last duty station was in the Tampa Bay area. At that time, I had decided I had to make a change. I literally looked at myself in the mirror and said, if I don't make a change, I'm not going to make it. I had people say, oh, 9 more years and you get to retire. And I said, I'm not going to survive 9 years.
Wow.
And I remember driving across the bridge, one of our bridges here, coming back from Tampa to where I live in St. Petersburg. And I had what I later realized was a panic attack.
Oh, wow.
And it wasn't because I was on a bridge. I mean, I was a paratrooper for years, jumped on a lot of airplanes, so it wasn't the bridge height or anything like that. But I had all the classic symptoms of a panic attack, and it was stress. It was the stress from the job, and I realized I have to shift. Came back to the States, as I said, and I eventually resigned. And I decided then, where am I going to go now? What's my next move?
Uh-huh.
I don't even know. What was I going to do? Well, the one thing I did know is that I had to do something very different than what I was doing. I had to do something healthy.
So how did you decide what was healthy?
That's a great question. How do I know what's healthy? Uh-huh. Well, first of all, I had to get healthy. Mm-hmm. I had to get healthy. I wanted to help people instead of work in a negative way with people,
mm-hmm.
as I had been. I needed to be, but I realized I needed to work on me first.
Mm-hmm.
So being in Florida, I started to search around, where do I start? And because of we have so many opportunities here for massage therapy to study and to train, I decided that was where I was going to begin the journey to health, to wholeness, to healing. And I'm using the word healing here in a very specific way. That's why I use it in the name of my business, Warner Healing Guidance. It comes from the Greek meaning to make whole.
Mm.
It's not like curing a disease. I was fragmented. I realize this now.
And that's where disease begins anyways, is the fragmentation.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. Disconnected in so many ways.
Right.
So I began in the massage therapy field. It definitely put me on the right track. I was helping me, I was doing something positive, I was helping other people, and that started to move me in the right direction. But as time went on, something in the back of my soul was knocking and saying, there's more. This is okay, this is good, but keep looking.
Uh-huh.
And at a particular point, I think I had been in massage therapy maybe 7 years or 8 years or so. And my son was now 15. And my son, I guess like a lot of guys that age, first of all, we're very good friends to this day. And he wanted to do what dad had done. He was 15 years old, and he starts talking about wanting to join the military.
And how did that make you feel?
Well, on the one hand, I don't like to discourage. I wouldn't want to discourage him.
Right.
On the other hand, I kind of knew the inequities of that profession. And just to give you a little background, I spent 11 years in the Army. My father was in the Marine Corps in World War II. My grandfather was in World War I in Europe. My great-great-great-grandfather was in the Civil War, so we're not career military people. Everybody just responded to a call at a particular time in their life.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my family responding to history. I was responding to what I thought was the best thing, joining the military. So anyway, here he is, 15 years old, and he was at that time in life of trying to figure out what it means to be a man, what does it mean to be, trying to prove himself.
Yeah, I would call that a rite of passage.
He was looking for that. He was looking for that. He was searching.
That experience.
That experience, mm-hmm. You know. How do I compare to other men? How do I compare to other people? He needed an ordeal. He needed a cause. He needed mm-hmm. to be some part of something bigger than himself.
Right.
And I think we all do.
Right. And back in the 60s, that was the hippie movement.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah. So he's 15. He's talking this about the military. And I'm thinking, there's got to be another way. Mm-hmm. There's got to be another way to, at least an alternative for him to choose from, to prove himself, do something that's difficult, mm-hmm. an ordeal, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And to say that he came through it.
And to say he did it. And that he can wear that as not necessarily as a badge of honor, but it's a touchstone.
Mm-hmm.
It's a benchmark in his life. When things start to get tough, he can say, well, at least I did that.
Right.
And now I know what tough is.
Right. And I think, you know, girls and boys, for that matter, they have brownies, they have Girl Scouts, they have, you know, the Boy Scouts, the Eagle Scout, you know. I mean, they have a whole list of things that that Eagle Scout has to accomplish
right.
in order to be one.
Right.
And it is. It's saying, I endured.
I endured.
And
I have my brother-in-law. I went through, you know, high school sports, and he falls back on what it took to do that. My son being a different person, not necessarily an athlete, he was also... I think he's a deep person. He's mm-hmm. a thinker, and I believed at the time, and I was very it was very true. Now that I come to see that he needed something a little different.
Mm-hmm.
So I had sort of formulated a question, if you will. I needed to find something. What can I do? What do I do with this? How do I give this young man an alternative? And it was pretty much on the forefront of my mind quite a bit as he's getting older and he's talking this. So, and of course, it can obviously shape his future. In a couple of years, he can go join the military.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my habit is, at the time, and still is when I look for reading material, I love going to the library. Our local library is wonderful. And my method of choosing a book at the library would to kind of find my section in the library, which I know is in the spirituality and this area of the library.
Right.
I would just walk down the aisles, the bookshelves, and not focus on anything, not read each title. I would just kind of soften my gaze, and usually a book just drew my attention. Maybe the spine of the book drew my attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I found what I wanted to read. Very often it worked that way. And that was pleasure reading.
Right.
Well, here I am working with this question in my mind, what to do with this, with my son's desire, you know, for his rite of passage type of thing. And a book popped out at me one day when I'm walking out of the library. And a book I'd never seen before. And I had go down to, I was in that library every week. And this book I had never seen before.
So was it sticking out?
No, it wasn't sticking out. It wasn't anything. It was the spine, maybe it was the colors. It kind of looked like leather or something. I'm not sure exactly. I can't explain it intellectually.
Mm-hmm.
But I pulled the book out, and the title was The Art of Pilgrimage.
Oh, okay.
And I recommend this to all the listeners here. It's by, the author is Phil Cousineau, The Art of Pilgrimage. It's a brilliant book.
And what's it about?
Well, he describes how to create and participate in sacred travel, creating a pilgrimage, and how all the dimensions of that. Now, the word pilgrimage... I knew, and I grew up Catholic. I went to a Catholic school, Jesuit education. I'm a history major out of college. So this kind of stimulated me a little bit. So I started reading the book. And one relatively brief passage in the book was about a pilgrimage in Spain,
mm-hmm.
To the Santiago de Compostela, which is in the town, city of Compostela. And...
Excuse me.
Bless you.
I knew I was going to sneeze.
Okay. So I started reading a little bit, and this is something I'd never heard of before. And I thought, my gosh, this is only the oldest pilgrimage trail in Europe and one of the most significant throughout the Middle
Ages. And how long has it been there?
Since about the 11th century.
Oh, my gosh.
10th, 11th century. Actually, Charlemagne was said to have, the Holy Roman Emperor in the 900s was said to have walked this pilgrimage trail when it was first put together. Now, there's a whole history to that. It goes across Spain from the French side of the Pyrenees to towards the west, to almost to the coast, across northern Spain. The trail itself is 500 miles, and it's a current pilgrimage trail. The European Union and the Spanish government keep the trail intact.
You made a movie about it, too.
I did. I saw the movie, and it was actually very good with Martin Sheen.
Martin Sheen, right?
Yeah.
He and his son, don't they walk it? Or is it a friend?
It's actually Martin Sheen's son in the movie dies on the trail.
Right.
And he walks it, picks it up. And I think it was his son that actually played his son in the very beginning of the movie, if I remember correctly.
That was interesting. I did see the movie.
It was located or filmed on location, so it was. I thought it was well done.
Is it a dangerous trail? Is that how his son died?
Well, interesting. It made it sound a little more harrowing than it was. It's, mm-hmm. And of course, on anything like that, it's a physical endeavor. Mm-hmm. And the first part of the trail, going up the Pyrenees from the French side, is probably the most grueling, if you will, physically part of it. And that's where the young man died in the movie. But I'm reading this book, I'm looking at the book, and I'm reading it, and he was talking about all sorts of pilgrimages, and I was learning what really a pilgrimage was by reading this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then this phenomena of the pilgrimage to Santiago, for some reason, it grabbed me. And I said, that's it. We got to do this.
So none of the other parts of the book did that, but that did, and it just
stuck with me. And I read the rest of the book, and I've read the book many times now, and there's various things in there one could get enamored with, but that was it. It just stuck with me. So I started my research. I started researching this pilgrimage thing. Finally got my dad, my information collected, and I said, you know, it was even reinforced more and more. So one day I went to my son, and I said, he loves to travel, and I said, so you want to go to Spain? And he looked at me, you know, kind of, okay, what's up, Dad? And he said, he said, yeah. And I said, well, how bad? And he goes, well, how bad is bad? And I said, are you willing to walk across Spain? And he kind of looked at me and said, well, how far is it? And I said, 500 miles. He said, okay, I'm in. So then it began. So we trained and we researched. And
how long did you train?
About 8 months.
And how did you train?
We trained every day. We walked 5 miles with our gear, and every weekend we did about a 20-mile walk.
Every weekend?
Every weekend we did a 20-mile walk. So not only that was in itself a whole magic experience. Of the interesting thing with that is when you're walking a long distance with another person, I found the most important thing is to find your common stride.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a metaphor in itself.
Mm-hmm.
He had longer legs than I do, so we learned to walk together. We learned to walk together, which to me now is brilliant.
Yes, that is. I mean, that's so symbolic in so many ways.
It is.
All right, so 20 miles every weekend, all at one time or over 2 days?
One day.
All right. So you were getting yourself into position because 20 miles times 30 is 600, and you knew that some days you wouldn't be walking 20.
Some days. We averaged about 15 miles a day, between 15 on the trail itself in Spain. Mm-hmm. We averaged about that, but it starts in the mountains and ends in the mountains. So the terrain was not Florida.
Mm-hmm. Not flat.
No mountains to train with here.
Right.
But as it turned out, the training prepared us in many ways to actually go on the pilgrimage.
I was wondering.
But interesting enough, we were totally prepared, but unaware of what would unfold. We prepared our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
We prepared our gear. But the trail illuminated so many other things for us. Emotional, spiritual, psychological level.
Yeah.
I was looking at that event. I had my own business, and I said, 30 days of just being able to, I had some new business ideas. I was going to think about all that, and I had all this organizational time, and that lasted about 2 days.
I would think the bonding that you felt with your son as you went day by day by day must have been absolutely amazing.
It was, and actually that began in our training. Now, we were very close to start with, mm-hmm. but we as I said, learned to walk together physically and other ways beforehand, and when we got to the trail, we were in stride, I'll just put it that way. But the trail itself is, as I came to find out, pilgrimage in its truest form is a quickening process.
Which means what?
It's taking almost a lifetime worth of training, spiritual training, guidance, molding, and putting it into a very condensed set of experiences. Because the pilgrimage trail, by its nature, is a microcosm, or it is a metaphor for the life journey, for your spiritual journey.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that intellectually. Mm-hmm. I knew that because I read the books, I did these things, but I had not walked the path yet.
I see.
We start walking and lessons unfolded for us.
What was the first lesson, let's say,
The first lesson was travel light.
Which means?
Don't take any more than you absolutely need. And so I had researched enough, and I, maybe from my military experience, I knew how to travel lightly. Mm-hmm. So we carried very minimum gear. I told my son before we left, we're only going to take two pair of underwear and one set of clothes. Two sets of clothes, one on, one off. He looked at me and he said, you are kidding, right? My wife thought we were nuts. My wife thought we were absolutely nuts. And I had this figured out. So anyway.
More socks, maybe?
Well, more socks. We carried a lot of socks, okay? Because at the end of the day, you can wash your clothes and put the clean ones on. So anyway. But once again, beginning the trail, the first couple of days on the trail, we're walking down, and this is in the countryside normally. Mm-hmm. It wasn't on the street. It wasn't the highway or anything like that. There was gear.
People had thrown off.
Had thrown off their excess stuff that they brought that they didn't need. And I look back and I go, my gosh, there it is. Stripping down only what you need, what they thought they needed, they didn't.
They didn't.
Another great life lesson started in the first couple of days, you know, only knowing the difference between what you need and what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize.
You know what's really interesting is one of the gals that I have on the show on a regular basis does the Appalachian Trail.
Mm-hmm.
And she pointed the same thing out. Now, she hasn't walked, that whole trail is over 2,000 miles.
Yeah, so it is, yeah.
But she does chunks of it every year. And so she's learned that whole premise of travel lightly, because you're carrying all that weight with you. And it's up and down and up and down. So
as I fast forward just for a moment on that lesson, because I teach, as I teach yoga and applied philosophy of yoga, and I teach meditation, many of the lessons I learned through my own direct experience, and I only teach from my own direct experience. I don't teach things that I read in a book.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the lessons I teach to this day. What are you carrying in that rucksack? You know,
right.
How many rocks are you putting in that rucksack?
Right.
You know, unforgiveness, you know, anger, you know,
sadness,
grief, all these things. Throw another rock in there. Mm-hmm. How can I lighten my load? What do I need? Do I need this right now? What can I let go of? That becomes a big theme. So we go on to the trail, and he happened to be the youngest pilgrim on the trail for the 30, it took us 30 days, 30 straight days of walking. He was the youngest one on the trail. And he was supported emotionally and psychologically from everybody we met. They'd walk with us for a while, and everybody was applauding him for being able to do this,
right,
and what have you. I'll just give you another little lesson that I learned from this and move is I say practice humility. Now, humility, we all understand being humble, I think. But I have a really specific story in this humility. When I say practice humility, I say this. I said, when you're strong, help others.
Mm-hmm.
But when you need assistance, and this was something hard for me,
yeah,
is step back and let someone else help you and give them a chance to be strong.
Right. You don't always have to be.
You don't have to be, but it's a gift you're giving them. We got to a point on this in this journey, and it was maybe a quarter of the way in. My feet swelled 3 sizes.
Oh, my goodness.
And I thought I knew what I was doing. I had bought oversized shoes, the whole bit. And it got to a place in a very small little village, and I couldn't walk anymore. I had the blisters and what have you. And I gave him some money, and I said, and he didn't speak a word of Spanish. And I said, his name is Jason. And I said, Jason, I'm sitting here in the refuge, the pilgrim refuge, and I said, you got to go find me a pair of shoes. And off he went. And about 2.5 hours later, he came back with the most brilliant pair of shoes to this day I've ever worn for walking.
Really?
And, I mean, talk about, you know, when you put yourself, when you're in alignment with what you're doing, those hands come out of the, they come and help you.
Right.
You
know, so what kind of shoes were these?
They were like an athletic type walking shoe. And they were actually made by one of the big shoe companies for the pilgrimage.
And you didn't know about them before?
No, they didn't carry them in the States.
Oh,
I come to
gosh.
Find out. But he went into a shoe store. He had my size. He didn't speak Spanish. However he got these shoes, he came back and it saved me. And that was his chance. And he tells that story because as a point of pride.
Right.
You know, my dad was, supposed to be the tough one, right?
Right.
And I was totally needed him at that moment.
I'm curious, I mean, from a structural point of view, how on earth did you keep walking with the blisters and the swelling?
That's the other, one of the other parts of a pilgrimage. It's an ordeal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, it's not a vacation.
Right. So you have to get up and do it.
You got to do it, and I was able to heal faster, and you know, it was. I'm not saying it was easy, but it was a lot easier with the right shoes. I'll tell you that.
And I bet your shoes stay donated. They were back there.
Well, the first ones were. I left them on the trail,
right
beside the trail with everybody else's stuff.
That's
funny.
Bet.
But we walked the trail, and lots of interesting things happened. There's I came away. Since I spoke about humility, I came away with seven meditations from the trail.
Okay.
7 lessons I learned.
All right. Number one.
You asked me which was number one, the first one I learned. Mm-hmm. I didn't put them in order of the way I learned them.
Mm-hmm.
But number one, we're all pilgrims.
Meaning?
On a sacred journey.
Okay. And that would be symbolic of our lives.
Our lives.
Okay.
That sacred journey is our life.
Our life.
If you can reframe your life as a pilgrimage, what is defined as a transformative journey to a sacred center. It's not a journey to transformation. It's a transformative journey. It's the journey that transforms us.
Right.
It's not the destination.
There was a young man, and I don't know that you would know him at all, but as a grief bereavement specialist in Green Bay, Wisconsin, he drowned when he was 15. And I worked with his mother and father for quite a long time. But they made a banner, a long banner, because the Green Bay Packers are so huge there. And they carried this banner to a number of Packer games because his parents had season tickets, which is rare all by itself. But the banner was, "The journey is the reward."
Perfect. Perfect. That's it. That's it in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is that. That is the essence of it. Because, as it turns out, the destination of this pilgrimage was a city with a cathedral, has historic significance, but it wasn't all the bells and whistles you were thinking it was going to be.
Right.
It was, you look back and you realize, no, the treasure was on the journey.
Right. It was what you learned.
Right. And so much. Humility. The first, as I said, the first lesson is we're all pilgrims. The second one is help your fellow pilgrim.
Right.
One of the most beautiful sights at the end of the day, people from all over the world who don't know each other, helping in a refuge where we would congregate and sleep, they were along the trail. Strangers who don't even speak the same language, bandaging someone else's feet.
Oh, wow.
Or massaging someone else's feet. Or their shoulders. It was a beautiful sight. So help your fellow pilgrim. It's easy to think about that on a trail that's a kind of a manufactured event, But can you take that into daily life?
Mm-hmm.
Look at your another person as a fellow pilgrim and help right. them out on their trail, because they're doing this. They're going on the same trail you are. Their experiences may be different, but we're all heading in the same direction.
Exactly.
And the third lesson is surrender to the road.
Which means?
Which means surrender your false sense of control. The irony of, one of the ironies, of course, this is the lesson. I thought I had this thing planned. I thought I knew what was going to happen every day because I had the guidebooks. I had read the guidebooks. I knew how far it was from point A to point B, and all this. I had it all mapped out, and uh-huh. how long it was going to take us, and where this was, and where that was.
Uh-huh.
And the interesting thing was, and the weather, of course, was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So every day we checked the weather, and okay, yep, tomorrow's going to be a great day. Tomorrow's going to be an easy day. Don't worry, it's only 10 kilometers or whatever it is, and it's going to be a sunny day. Inevitably, every time I said that,
It rained.
It was the opposite. It's like the universe is laughing. You know, man plans and God laughs.
Right, exactly.
And that's exactly what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, we gave up. The guidebook went out the window.
Another one of those things you didn't need.
I didn't need that, plus my Spanish dictionary out the window. Hand and arm signals worked a lot better than trying to look up words.
I bet.
So we... and so that's the other one. You know, you surrender to the road. You don't control the road.
Mm-hmm.
You only control how you walk on it.
How you walk on it.
Yeah. So this idea of the only thing we really control, we have this false sense of we can control our future. We, you know, if we have the right insurance plan or if we do everything correctly, the mm-hmm. future will unfold the way we think
mm-hmm.
it is. And I'm not telling anybody don't put money in the bank and don't have insurance. I'm mm-hmm. just saying hold on loosely, because the only thing we control is our own actions.
Yeah, the attitude with which you greet whatever happens to you.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely. And another lesson was gratitude, is practice gratitude. You know, gratitude, normally speaking, is be thankful for the nice things that you got. Look around at all the blessings you have. Look
mm-hmm.
at all the things that you food and family and possessions. But I realized that to also be grateful for the obstacles, for the resistance,
mm-hmm.
for that grist in the mill.
Mm-hmm.
Because without resistance, there's no growth. You don't build a muscle without resistance.
That's
you don't
true.
Build you don't build yourself without your inner self without resistance. So the resistance that the pilgrimage trail is it's designed to have that, if you will, or
mm-hmm.
it's inherent in a pilgrimage is the resistance and obstacles. Those are what we're building our spiritual muscles with those.
Mm-hmm.
Those that resistance.
I would think. A part of that in terms of what you're building is the belief that you can come through it. You know, the
oh.
belief that you have the endurance within you, you know, to master something like that. And I know a lot of people who go through cancer and cancer treatments, that's what they actually report, is they're thankful that they got the disease because of what it taught them about what they could overcome.
Oh, absolutely. And that person going through that experience
mm-hmm.
was on a pilgrimage that they didn't choose, as
no.
I chose Santiago,
right?
But it was one they were thrust into.
Right. But if you hadn't done Santiago, you wouldn't be who you are today.
Absolutely not. I would. who knows where I'd be right now? I don't. You're absolutely right. And what you just said is very pertinent to my son being able to, or myself and my son, leverage this experience for him to be that rite of passage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to say, I had the endurance, I had the fortitude, not just physically, but otherwise,
mm-hmm.
to not give up and to do these things. And that gratitude is also, it teaches us compassion.
Right.
When we've gone through something, then we can, you know, if you go through a loss, then when you see someone else who's gone through a loss, as you're in your business, you
mm-hmm.
have been,
mm-hmm.
you can empathize with that. It's not sympathize, but you can empathize with
right.
that. I understand to some degree what you're going
right.
through. And lastly, which becomes a very big part of the pilgrimage, the very last of the seven observations or meditations is share the treasure. That's what I'm trying to do right now, is what the treasure is. You go into this event, you know, a pilgrimage, you go out to go in,
hmm.
inward.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In a labyrinth, as we'll talk at a later point, you go in to come out.
So it's just the opposite.
It's the opposite, but it's the same.
Same. Mm-hmm.
It's this. It's the same coin with two different sides.
Right.
The purpose is the same. is that it's a journey that takes you to that sacred center, which is within you. You may think the sacred center is some church somewhere,
right?
Or the center of the labyrinth where there may be a nice design or what have you, or a candle or what. But that's not it. That's really that's the icing on the cake. The real journey is an inward journey. And share the treasure. You can only share it when you come out. And normally that treasure that you share, as I've come to find out now, this many years later, is, in essence, it's a turnaround of the heart. It's ultimately a shift in perspective.
So the perspective that you had going in was not the same one when you finished?
No, not at all. And I'll give you a really quick, I think most everyone who is listening can relate to The Wizard of Oz.
Sure.
Okay. Now there's a case. Dorothy was on a pilgrimage. Mm-hmm. But Dorothy it wasn't one of her choosing. She got plucked out of Kansas. But if you remember quickly, Dorothy, if you remember, in Kansas, it was in black and white, number one.
Right, and then it goes to color.
Right. And so she's in black and white in Kansas, and I grew up in Kansas City, so I kind of understand how she might have felt. And she was very unhappy with everything.
Uh-huh.
Everything was wrong. She just had to get out of there.
Uh-huh.
As fate happens, she gets plucked out of Kansas, dropped into Oz, and now it's in Technicolor.
Right.
And what was she trying to do? What was the one thing she was trying to
go home.
To find her sacred center.
Mm-hmm.
She would just wanted to go home. Mm-hmm. I think metaphorically, that's what we're all trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to go home. So she follows the path, the yellow brick road.
Right.
It was a laid out path that was to take her home. There's a pilgrimage trail. Along the way, she meets companions.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all looking for something too.
Right. They were looking for courage.
Courage and compassion.
And
discernment and wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So these classic things we're all looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And they endure all these ordeals with, everything, even flying monkeys.
Okay? Which might be all of the things that distract us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have my own flying monkeys today. Okay. So she does all this only to come to Oz and find out that the center, kind of like the church in Spain,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't all bells and whistles. In fact, she found out that it was just bells and whistles with the,
mm-hmm.
the wizard, who was supposed to be the founder of all knowledge, was just this little bald man who didn't have anything for him. He was
mm-hmm.
It was a sham.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing he said was, what? You have it already.
Yeah,
you came here with it. You got it. And you
just
got
click your heels.
In her case, she just had to click her heels. These other guys, they said, you got this. And all of a sudden, he realizes he has a heart. You've got this. All of a sudden, I can do,
I'm smart.
I'm smart. All of a sudden, I have courage. And the wizard didn't do anything for him.
Mm-hmm.
He just put a mirror in front of their face.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you have it already within you. That's the essence of what pilgrimage is.
Mm-hmm.
Or walking the labyrinth, as we'll talk. So but this is sharing the treasure. If she had just stayed in Oz or gone on walking somewhere, that wouldn't have been it. But she returned. The return is the critical point for,
mm-hmm.
for the pilgrimage and for walking the labyrinth. Because as you come out, you're not the same person.
Right.
You've transformed. And when you come back, wherever you go back to home, she went right back to black and white. She went right back to back to Kansas. But what was different? Her perspective
was. And in that respect, I've mentioned this on other shows too, but somebody who's had a near-death experience, they are one person one minute, maybe they get killed in an automobile accident, but they get resuscitated. Maybe they have a massive coronary, but they come back, and their lives are never the same because they realize that the journey, like you said, is what it's about. They can see their life in perspective now.
I think that it's absolutely true. I've never had that type of experience myself,
mm-hmm.
but I have talked to a number of people. Of course, I've read some things, other accounts. And what you just said is my experience is that whatever their visions that they had or entities that they saw or didn't see, what there's some change, there's some differences, maybe because they're culturally different.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that they all come back with is a conviction that this is not all there is.
Right.
There is, it goes on
mm-hmm.
and in a big way. When I teach meditation, one of the things that I try to help the students do is work with tapping into that intuitive part of themselves, that intuitive consciousness. Mm-hmm. And I said, when you have that ability, that can result in what I call a near life experience.
Rather than a near death. Yeah,
because you come away with the same conviction that what the physical part of our lives is just part of the journey, that there's more. Mm-hmm. There's a whole dimension of dimensions of love and consciousness moving forward. Mm-hmm. So you can actually have that near-death experience through other practices. Mm-hmm. That's my belief, and that's my personal experience with that. So,
all right. So when you and your son came back to the United States, how had his life, maybe as a 15-year-old, how had it changed? How had your life changed?
After the pilgrimage?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Well, I will just... On that way out, I just want, that's a good place to put this in. My son, we walked, actually, two things happened. That was the summer of 2001.
Oh, wow.
And in that journey, we made contact with a lot of, we made friends with a lot of people, mm-hmm. okay? And to this day, I'm still in contact with some of these folks. We write maybe once or twice a year. Mm-hmm. But when my son came back and went back to school, he came home one day and said, Dad, people heard what I did, and they asked me if I had a good time. I said, so, what did you tell them? He said, I didn't know what to tell them. I said, well, did you have a good time? He said, well, sometimes. Sometimes not so much. I said, was it worth it? Oh, hell yes. I said, that's what you tell them.
Yes.
It wasn't fun all the time, but it mm-hmm. was well worth it.
Well worth it.
And he didn't join the military. I'll fast forward. Mm-hmm. He didn't join the military, not because I asked him not to, but because he shifted. And interesting enough, at 15, he didn't speak a word of Spanish. Now he teaches high school Spanish in California near San Francisco, and he's the head of the Spanish and Language Department.
Oh, how fascinating.
Yeah, it totally affected him. He became so enamored with the experience. One of the byproducts of the experience was Spanish culture and Spanish mm-hmm, language. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of the young couples that walked with us, when they came back to the States, they had a baby, and they named him after my son.
Really?
Yeah, they were so impressed with
that. Now, has he stayed in touch with that family?
No, I have.
You have?
I have. Okay. He hasn't. I don't think he has. How did it... And so for him, he was able to move on. Mm-hmm. Grow into a fine young man, and I think he had. And I just talked to him about a week ago, and we talk about this stuff all the time, and how that to this day he talks about how that experience had formed him mm-hmm. as having the confidence, and we check that box off of rite of passage.
Rite of passage.
Yes, yeah. It was a very effective one. Myself, interesting enough, it was a rite of passage or change. I was 45 at the time, okay? And I was in a state of flux. Something was saying, you need more. There's something else. Keep looking. And that had opened me up to listening, paying attention, studying more about what's out there, for what I was trying to do. Eventually went into yoga. I found yoga. I mean, I'd done yoga in my life, but I actually became more serious with yoga and started studying and then teaching meditation. So I think that became the next step for me. It was a quickening for me to move in the direction I needed to go. It opened me up.
What I'm hearing in my own head is that it became the next door that opened the journey for you.
Absolutely.
So it was extending what you had learned, yep. and then saying, okay, here's your next doorway.
I couldn't agree more. It also gave me so much more confidence in listening to my intuition, mm-hmm. if you will, my intuitive, listening for those calls, looking for those synchronistic events, and paying mm-hmm. attention to them even more, because they had shown me, I don't know how more vividly it could, you know, the universe could have shown me.
Mm-hmm. That it's so interesting how when you become aware of synchronicity,
yeah.
But the awareness has to happen first, because otherwise things are there all the time showing you the way. You know, it's like, over here, look, and we're looking, in a totally different direction. And so the universe is kind enough to just say, okay, we'll wait until you're ready.
Absolutely. I believe it's a sign of a compassionate universe.
I think so too.
It's a universe, but who else would care? There's a caring, there's a compassion there to keep working, to guide us in that direction. Right. And so from there, having been more open, more cognizant, and looking for ways to start to communicate what I was learning and still learning to this moment, taking and starting this path through yoga and meditation, I started to see that meditation needed to be a little more than what I was experiencing.
Mm-hmm. Not just sitting quiet.
Not just sitting. There's lots to be gained from sitting and learning to focus and concentrate. Mm-hmm. Plenty. And I found that most meditation systems, the way they're taught, at least in this culture, focus, I'm going to say 75 to 95% on learning to just focus and concentrate, which is something we can all benefit from. Mm-hmm. But I looked at yoga, and I was fortunate enough to have some very, very good teachers, looking at meditation as, yes, that's great. That's step one. Now, what are you going to do with that? What are you going to do with that ability to focus and concentrate? What are you going to look at? You're going to look at yourself. Mm-hmm. Why are you going to look at yourself? What is it? Why? Why would you do that? What's the next step? Mm-hmm. And the next step is, to my opinion, is to learn to actively not only connect with, but live out of our authentic self, our intuitive consciousness, to be the place that nourishes us. But how do I get there? What does it feel like? What does it sound like? What does it taste like? To be in touch with that part of myself, and what do I do with that? That's where you go for wisdom, discernment, compassion. Mm-hmm. And so that became the next step for me. And so I created a meditation, a very simple meditation, I call it a framework, if you will, called the PATH, ironically, the PATH. It's an acronym for P-A-T-H, pause, assess, take action, and heal. And involved in that is the whole part is to be able to connect with your intuitive consciousness. And so I'm teaching this, and I've written a couple book proposals. They haven't gone anywhere yet.
They will.
Okay. But, and maybe the next book will later, but... How do I do this? I was doing it effectively, but not effectively enough. I didn't feel I was. Uh-huh. And I was putting something out there. I know it. And the next thing that I was called to was the labyrinth.
And how did that happen, where you actually got a calling for that?
The calling for the labyrinth was a little more, I would not have heard this calling years before. The calling to pilgrimage was a book popped out at me. It didn't actually physically pop off the shelf, but it might as well have. Uh-huh. Okay, it was pretty black and white. It was literally black and white. It was in print.
Right.
In a book.
Right.
The labyrinth unfolded in all of a sudden, and I'm sure you've had experience like this synchronistic experience, uh-huh, if you want to call it coincidence, you can, that I started meeting people. I started seeing things. People were gifting me books on the labyrinth. People were talking about the labyrinth. I'm all of a sudden it's in my way all over the place.
Now, a labyrinth is altogether different than a maze. So absolutely, I want people to sort of understand that they're not one and the same.
Not in the same. So a labyrinth, if you can imagine, all of you have probably seen a maze. Let me just use that. If you're not sure what a labyrinth is.
A maze, even if they've gone through a corn maze.
If you've gone through a corn maze. You may have even seen one like one of those crossword puzzle book where
you have to take a pencil and follow
this path around. Right. And the difference is that a labyrinth is one continuous path, although it's very circuitous. It twists and turns all the way around in a circular. Not all, but most labyrinths are in a circle. There are square ones, but most of them are in a circle. A labyrinth is there's no tricks, there's no dead ends, there's no traps. If you just follow the path, you make it to the center, which is a metaphor in itself.
Right.
A maze, on the other hand, there's dead ends. You know, you can get lost. Mm-hmm. You can't get lost in a labyrinth if you just follow the yellow brick road, if you just follow the path.
Right.
And so I started to explore the labyrinth, of course, through reading and what have you. We have a number of labyrinths in our community. I started walking them. Just to get this experience, and I was realizing it was starting to unfold for me that this was an amazing tool to actualize what I was trying to teach.
So when somebody begins a labyrinth, as I understand it, they begin with maybe a question for themselves, and they meditate on that question as they walk through the path.
Well, yes, but I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I do it a little differently.
Okay.
It absolutely begins with the question, because remember I said earlier, the question, it opens the soul. The question is the catalyst for the journey.
Mm-hmm.
The question is that longing. What I was trying to remember with the pilgrimage, I was trying to, how do I help my son do this rite of passage thing without having to join the military?
Mm-hmm.
And the universe came back. I started listening to what was coming at me, and I found that. What I have students do when they go, and what we're going to do on when we get together in a couple days for this labyrinth walk, is I have just a very simple guided meditation to have you identify something in your life. I guide this. And because the labyrinth to me is very much, in fact, even pilgrimage, is an exercise in releasing one thing and receiving something else.
Okay.
So we go through a guided meditation where you identify, what do I need to let go of? You may have a question. I came today with a question. Great. Now, can you look at that question and ask yourself, does it fit that question might have something to do with letting go of one thing? Of letting go of something. Do I need to release something, let one thing go to mix it? What do I need to let go of to lighten my load?
Mm-hmm.
Most questions, if you examine them, I believe can fit that. The labyrinth can be used in a variety of ways. You can go in with a question. You can ask the question all along the trail.
Mm-hmm.
What I like to have students do is, what I do is at the beginning of class, I give them a black stone. They formulate a question. And whether they can frame it as releasing. What do I need to let go of? What is it I need to shed to get the question answered? Maybe I'm holding on too tightly to this. How do I do this? How do I help? So then you take the black stone, represents your question or what it is you need to let go of. You say it, you write it, you actually formulate a sentence on a piece of paper, you write it down. Your question, your intention, your prayer. What is it, you know, help, I don't know what to do next. Or it may be simple, I don't know what to do. What do I do next? Could be that simple. Mm-hmm. Formulating that intention, prayer, question. The black stone represents that. You hold it in your hand. You can repeat that question two or three times to yourself. But when you walk into the labyrinth, don't. You don't need to say it. It's there.
Mm-hmm.
You've put it out.
Mm-hmm.
To God, the universe, whatever your belief system is.
Right.
The stone has just enough weight in it to where you're not going to forget it.
Right.
And then walk the labyrinth. You just walk the labyrinth. One step, one step. And because of the nature of that labyrinth, that twisting and turning path, you've got to pay attention to where you are. Because if your eyes go off, you can go off track.
Sure.
You can go off track and you can get turned around. And you're going, oh gosh, now where do I go? And if you get lost, you turn around, you go back, you can start at the beginning and try it again. It doesn't matter. You walk this path with the stone in your hand, you come to the center. In the center, there's a little dish for you to drop the stone in. And the next dish they're full of clear stones.
Hmm.
You pick up the clear stone. The clear stone is not going to tell, I don't tell anybody what the clear stone is. It's what you come out with.
Right.
And you walk out with the stone. That's what you're receiving. So the labyrinth, the pilgrimage has stages.
Mm-hmm.
You have the searching, the calling, you know, your departure, the journey, sacrifice you endure, you know, the arrival, the return, and sharing the treasure. The labyrinth has its own stages. You have reflection. You have releasing. You're releasing something into the center,
mm-hmm.
and then receiving something. From the center, the center. Then you return, and then there's a transformation. There's a rebirth. There's a regreening.
Mm-hmm.
They both have that same basic process. And what that stone, that clear stone represents, is whatever you're going to determine for yourself what that is.
Right.
It could be an answer. It can be a direction. It can be whatever. And sometimes it doesn't mean anything to you that day.
Right. It could
come. Or that week or a month later.
Right. It could come over some time.
Yeah. It could. Yeah.
Wow. And I'm thinking about the fact that you use the Wizard of Oz, because in each of the cases of the Tin Man and the Lion, the Scarecrow, they all receive something. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't so much a stone, of course, but they had their journey. So their journey could have been the labyrinth. And they received something at the end, recognizing...
They got clarity.
They did.
They got clarity on, oh, I have this. Mm-hmm. I've had it all along. What did I need to let go of to realize that?
To realize that.
I had a false sense of who I was. Each one of them had to let go of something.
Right.
A preconceived idea. What were the veils that were in front of it masking their clarity?
Exactly.
And they all had, as we all do, we all have the answer. We have the answers to our questions. We just have to get out of our own way and learn to listen to.
And that's the key. I have used that so many different times, is that we have two ears. We hear just fine as long as we listen. But the majority of people don't know how to listen, and they're so busy trying to figure out how they're going to respond to something that they never really hear the message.
So true. I read or heard somewhere that we were given two ears and one mouth.
Yes.
To be used in that proportion.
Right. So that we listen twice as much as we speak.
Absolutely.
That is so true. I want you to take a couple, we've only got a few minutes left, mm-hmm. The hour just flies, but I want you to share again how people can find you, Doug. So if somebody's listening to the show and they go, I would love to listen to him talk more. I would love to be involved in his meditation group. I would love to come and walk the labyrinth like I'm going to do. How do they find you?
Again, my email address is probably my best way to get a hold of me, and we can open up a dialogue. It's mm-hmm. Douglas, D-O-U-G-L-A-S, at warnerhealingguidance.com. It's all one word, no spaces. Mm-hmm. Phone number is 727-804-5356. One of the things I didn't mention in the beginning, I do have a YouTube channel, and I've got about 60 videos on that YouTube channel concerning meditation and applied philosophy of yoga. Mm-hmm. And that's youtube.com/Douglas Warner.
Okay.
Okay.
You want to say that one more time?
Yeah. It's youtube.com/Douglas Warner, my name.
Okay.
But no spaces.
Okay.
And feel free to comment and open a dialogue there. I'm going to be holding labyrinth walks for the equinoxes and the solstices throughout the year next year. I actually have a staycay, if you will, retreat at Yoga for All in March, where the theme is going to be urban pilgrimage, where we're going to combine this, everything I've talked about with pilgrimage, mm-hmm. with the labyrinth. We're going to use the labyrinth as a form of pilgrimage, and we're going to talk in much more depth, and we're going to have a number of exercises. That'll be a Friday night, Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon.
That sounds like a fabulous thing to do.
It'll be a lot of fun.
I would think so.
So if you have any interest in any of those things, please contact me. I'd love to talk with you all.
That would be wonderful. I may participate in that one. We'll see. February 22nd, you're going to be back. The show, of course, is live at 11 a.m. And we're going to be talking about hearing your call.
Yeah.
So everybody has a calling. Most of us have no clue as to what it is. And so maybe listening to that particular show will help somebody discern what their real calling is, or at least a pathway to begin moving towards that calling. So I want to thank everybody for joining us this Saturday, and I hope that the coming week brings you nothing but health and wellness. Again, please go to my website, synergyconnectionradio.com, and check out everything that's there. If you do decide to order a Boomer product, if you use my name, Lucy, L-U-C-Y, in the promo code, you do get $5 off of your order. Every little bit helps. And there are, almost 7 pages of shows now. So if you go to show notes, you can find a variety of different shows that might meet your needs. Just look at the synopsis of the show and then click on listen, and you'll be able to hear that person's interview. I hope everyone has a fabulous weekend, and we'll look forward to seeing you next Saturday. Take care.